Well, welcome to another edition of Warrior Connection, ladies and gentlemen. We're going to continue on with our conversations, trying to improve the life of all the veterans and all the caregivers and everything else. Obviously, it continues to be a problem, and we've got to address it. Hopefully, we can get legislation through the U.S. Congress and make a big difference. So what we want to talk about today is the caregivers' bills and everything in Congress. Denise, are you there? You want to open this up
yes.
and introduce
can
our guest, please?
Me? Can everybody hear me?
Yep.
Hello?
Yeah.
Can you hear me?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
This is Ray. Yeah.
Hello? Okay. Today we have very important and urgent, timely information. And as I asked Keith Nordic, a former 101st Airborne, Gulf War veteran, and many, many years been involved with trying to help our fellow Gulf War veterans. What Keith discovered was the new act that is in the Senate side right now. The Veterans Committee, as usual, puts an omnibus bill together. This one's called the Veterans First Act, and I think it has 2016 on it. And in that bill, and I've got the link on my Facebook timeline, on my own Facebook page, Denise Nichols, with the link to the full bill and the pages on that link that you need to look at closely. And what we're going to be talking about is page 109 to 120 on that PDF form. So without due time wasted here, Keith, you were the first one that called me and alerted me to the problem, and we're trying to get responses. So let's go directly to the portion of the bill that has us all lighting fires everywhere.
Okay, so under the act, it amends the 2010 act of, I don't have my notes in front of me, it's the Caregivers Act of 2010.
Correct.
It amends the dates of eligibility. In the old bill, it's post 9/11. Those are the people that are covered only. Under the amendment that Isaacson and Blumenthal have put up, the dates now are 7 May 1975 prior, and post 9/11, which leaves a 26-year donut hole open to those that serve that are not covered. My big concern is, when did our country start distinguishing classes of veterans? We all served. We all did our thing. We should be treated equitably. And in this bill, it definitely doesn't show equitability. We've contacted the senator's office, and they more or less told us that in 2 years' time after the bill's passage that we would be included. And if you read the bill, nowhere does it say that will be included. It does refer to a 2-year time period that the VA has to implement an IT program. The IT program is there in the legislative body because the GAO found a huge IT discrepancy in the program that is now current. And it also lists a number of people that have applied for the program and have yet to be approved. In the GAO report, it does not state that will be added in 2 years' time or recommendation of a 2-year time period to be added, as Senator Eisenhoff's office has stated, and they have referred to the GAO report. And what I'm asking everybody out there to do is to write their congressman requesting an amendment to the bill to include all veterans of all eras. And I pass this on for more discussion now.
Okay. People, we need the letters take too long to get to the Hill because all letters go and have to be processed through a special facility. So your letters can get delayed. What I recommend is everybody go to House, www.house.gov, and the other side is www.senate.gov. When you get to those two main pages, on the top, you can click on the icon for representative or senators. You can find your state listed by state or alphabetical by the senator or the rep. We need emails. We need to find their Facebook pages that every senator and every rep, I think almost all of them have, make comments there. Does on Twitter, get it to work, guys. The other thing is phone calls. Massive, massive amounts of phone calls about the equity that is not addressed in this bill. And it is not fair for any veteran to be left out of a benefit that was started mainly just for post 9/11. And we don't want any decisions in the legislation, and we're going to have to fight because this bill was like an omnibus bill brought up to the Veterans Committee on the Senate side. It has already passed the Senate committee. We already have quotes from Mr. Miller, chairman on the House Veterans Affairs, ready to work with them and pass this on through. So we need senators aware of what's going on and our big concern there. So we need to hit all the senators, Senate Veterans Affairs members, and each and every senator. We need the same on the House side. People, it only takes one senator or one House of Representatives, and the more the better, to say, no, this isn't right. We're getting a firestorm of phone calls. That's what you do. You mass up. And that's what we're calling for, is emails, phone calls, never ending until they, you know, call uncle, you know, give. Because this is critically important. We have vets that are dying that can't even get their benefits that are Gulf War vets, be it brain cancers, early heart attacks. You know, we've talked about that on the show before. So any of you on the line with us that want to ask questions about that legislation and about the portion that we're so concerned about, please speak up now.
Denise, I'd like to add something to that. While we're in service, we were taught from the first day in basic training, we never leave a fellow soldier on the field of battle. Yet, our Senate has felt it's their due duty to do that to us. They have left 26 years worth of veterans on the field. That's not right. Exactly,
Keith. And what really upsets me is that when they put out their press release, they did not cover this in detail. They hid the facts. And on
that's
some
right.
of the initial,
they stated all era veterans are included.
And nowhere,
that came out of
nowhere in the bill is that covered. Doug, do you have a comment?
Well, I mean, we have so many veterans. I mean, all of us here right now. Ray, I mean, Ray's wife has to have and take care of him, and help everything as a, you know, Vietnam era. That's pre-1975. All of us were in Vietnam. We went on to Desert Storm. The health effects of Desert Storm and what we're seeing and what we're hearing with these individuals. I mean, day after day, I have had multiple phone calls today. Individuals calling for help, where the veteran or the caregiver has to help the veteran for the Desert Storm era. I mean, the health effects of Desert Storm itself are devastating all the veterans and their families. The suicides are absolutely out of control. We lost Paul Lyons, our co-host, and his wife, Tammy. We've heard year, month after month, week after week, year after year, of the problems that are going on. And if we don't authorize the caregivers and give them the capability to take care of them, it's a nightmare. The other problem we have with it is, again, you know, the caregivers are working continuously. Some of them don't have any income. They have inadequate income to take care of their families because they've have to given up their jobs to take care of the veteran. And the military has abandoned everybody. The VA has abandoned everybody. The House and the Senate have abandoned everybody. And it's as if, you know, we gave our all and now there's nothing to give back.
And some of us are covered now, you know, prior to 1975, that's a lot of Vietnam vets. But, you know, we don't want to divide classes of veterans. It is a benefit that should be offered to all. They learn how to deal with it, give them money, quit quit piecing it out piecemeal. So I'm happy, yes, for the Vietnam vets. I wonder how many are already in nursing homes or assisted living or don't have a wife any longer. Their wife may have died or, you know, their kids are grown. Who's going to be their caregiver if you do it, you know, that way? So, you know, we can't parcel this out. There is no way to parcel it out. I know I've thought about severity levels, diagnosis levels, prognosis of how long they're going to live. But the basic point is that it should cover all veterans. There should not be any donut hole at all. Okay?
Right, Denise.
And of course, you're going to have, as Keith will explain here, what currently happens is you have to be rated to, you know, qualify. Keith, would you go through that list for us of what has to be there?
The partial understanding I got from the program as it currently sits, there's three tiers of payment. Everybody's into the benefit side of the house on disabilities. There's three tiers of payments. One's a small amount, and the other one's moderate, and the other one's pretty good chunk of change. What it is the VA, you apply to the program, the VA looks at your date, and they determine eligibility from your date. They approve it, goes to the state step two. The VA will then look at the guy's disability and the dates and approve that. It then goes to the VAMC, the VA medical center that you're going to. Within that VAMC, not the VAR, the VAMC, there's an office there that assigns health care, home health care. They will come out, set up the training, which is an online training course. The dependent, which is the father, mother, brother, sister, will then take the course, get certified, present that to the home health care. They will step, next step is they'll come out, inspect the home, interview the application spouse or caregiver, and make a determination whether they're fit to provide care. The last thing they do is they award the care benefits to the veteran. And the thing is, right now within the VA, the programs is in such a shambles. They have 4,000 approved applications throughout the country. There is 38,000 applications outstanding. And what the senators clued in on is we won't inundate the VA with more applications, so we'll create this donut hole, thereby saving the VA more embarrassment than they already have. But we will tell them that they have to have a state-of-the-art, adequate IT system to handle the influx of claims within 2 years. And it comes down to, the bill was actually, this was, that bill actually created to get the entire Soldiers First Act passed, because the home care is, will be in the bill will cost approximately $3.2 billion. And if they add the 26 years, that number will go up in excess of $6 billion. And as we remember from the omnibus bill a few years ago that Bernie Sanders introduced, it died because it was a $64 billion bill. Country can't afford it, and that's where we kind of sit. People are looking at the cost of sending their young soldiers to war. Everybody wants to be protected from the hordes crossing the Great Plains and attacking their homes. So they want the military, but they don't want to pay the cost after the military, after you've left the military.
Now, let's bring in
just in a bad situation.
Now,
yes,
Keith,
let's
can
bring
you
in
also just
Laura and Ray
us,
right now. I mean, Ray has been writing the book on this. Laura, is there?
Get.
Laura, you've been a caregiver. You've been writing the book on this, trying to help people get set up. Did the VA or the military give you or anybody that you know any specific training on how to be a caregiver and to help vets?
The only caregiver treatment or teaching that I got, the VA offered a a class for some of the wives. It was about a three-hour class, about four times I went. And they just gave helpful hints of how to cope with it more than what to do.
Yeah, and that doesn't do any good. We hear this. I mean, the University of Illinois got a program right now where they want to use meditation and mindfulness and make all the caregivers feel good for a few minutes, like getting drunk or whatever. You feel great while you're relaxing for a few minutes, but afterwards the problems remain. And I think,
true.
As you said, Ray, and what you've written in your book,
there was a few helpful hints, but nothing that, if Ray had been really sick, there was no training in it for me.
Physically sick.
Laura, Ray, what do you think needs to be done? I mean, you're seeing these new kids. These new kids are coming back messed up. You've got the Vietnam era messed up. We've got Desert Storm is messed up.
Well, you know,
what
Doug,
do we need to do? Do they
what
have
I focus on with these young guys is a program that covers a lot of territory, but it's about post-trauma, and it's also about moral injury. But a lot of it has to do with the family, because if you can get that family to stay together, if you can minister somehow to that wife and those children and get those young warriors to have a good family, or at least, you know, stay together. And that would help tremendously, because instead of just one person suffering by themselves, there's a multitude of them, and then you could have more input into the person's life. Yeah, we understand about abandonment. I mean, we're looking at right now what you, Denise and Keith were talking about, was about abandonment. And that's a bad feeling for anybody to have to deal with. And I know that slapped you guys in the face from the Gulf War, because they eliminated you from it. But like Keith said, I believe it is, you can't eliminate soldiers. They're warriors. Sailors, Marines, airmen, you know, Coast Guardsmen. You include it all. They made the same commitment to serve their country, and the country said they would take care of them if they were injured. Well, they got injured, so let's take care of them.
No, I think we have the problem with Desert Storm. I mean, the number of actual casualties that we had from combat operations was a few hundred, definitely less than 1,000. And today we're looking at a quarter of a million, 250,000 to 300,000. I mean, the VA's documents confirm well over 300,000 Desert Storm vets have applied for disability. I mean, that's an incredibly huge number beyond any comprehension. We're looking at 50% casualty rate. Not from enemy fire, but from all of the toxics and everything that's wasted everybody's lives.
Okay, Keith?
That was incurred in the desert. And we're the largest casualty group that U.S. military history has ever seen, yet we're unrecognized.
Okay, Keith, would you tell us what the caregiver gets paid?
Say that again. You only look at one statistic, Doug. These guys came back home after being over in Iraq, which is just going to a third world country, leaving, like we talk about Disney World here, and then going into a third world country is a real shocker. And then you're around military. I mean, we were expecting back home 100,000 casualties. I'm sure you guys knew the same thing. They had 100,000 body bags put up for our troops. So when you're under that kind of pressure, there's a lot of mental pressure also. And when you hear alarms going off all the time, that's a lot of strain on the mind. And then when you come back home, I've read statistics where they said that Gulf War veterans have 90%, it's a 90% divorce rate, because they came back to a world that had changed and they were unable to cope. Their spouses were unable to cope. And so first thing you know, you had a lot of divorce. And it's just created so much problems, even for the Gulf War veterans. They're just like everybody else. They participated in a war.
Can we have Keith back on to tell what the caregiver gets if you get into this program? Keith, are you there still?
Okay, under the new program, what the caregiver will get is a monthly stipend from the VA. They'll get a 30-day respite allowance, and there'll be no bill does not cover medical insurance for the caregiver. Under the new bill, they'll be eligible for VA CAMP, CAMP VA. And that's what the caregiver gets. The amount I read would be equal to what the local nursing home pays one of their nurses. per hour. And I don't know how they'll figure out the hourly amount for care to the veteran and all. So that's what the benefits will be. And
I think to everybody understand the respite care. The respite, what that means is instead of the spouse or the family member taking care of the veteran, they're allowed to relax for 2 weeks or a week or whatever is a month.
30,
in a year, and allow
right.
somebody VA else professionally trained to come in and take care of that veteran and alleviate some of the continuous ongoing stress that just keeps building up and building up because of delayed, denied, ineffective care and no answers.
Right. That would be a 30-day time period that they'll get respite care for.
So I want to remind people. I want to remind people, we have to mobilize all the veterans, all the families, members. We have to get all of us together to make these emails to the senators and their reps and to make their phones ring off the hook in D.C. offices. If we don't mount the hugest phone call network, this won't happen because this is on a roll. They've already passed it through the Veterans Committee. House Chairman Miller is already kind of going along with this. So we have got to have our voices heard. We've got to use multiple tools, being it email, phone calls, hit their Facebook pages, everything we can do. Those that use Twitter, get them involved. But if we don't respond and get a massive, massive response from veterans, family members, and all of us sticking together on the principle of the subpart, I think it's D, subpart D, but the link is on my Facebook page, and it's page 109 to 120 on the government exec on the first Veterans First Act. We need to spread that as far as we can get, call for people to get on to their senators and reps in the D.C. offices. If we don't accomplish this, we all go down.
I'd like to bring something up, Denise. For those guys out there that are sitting back in their easy chair right now and wondering, why should I be concerned about this? It doesn't concern me right now. I'm on two legs. I go to work. Why should I phone in? Look down the road, 10, 20, 30, 40 years. Where might you be? You'll be needing the care of the VA with home health care at some time and point in your life. If you don't stand up now, it won't be there then. Look at the big picture and look at it really hard.
And I encourage the Vietnam vets, even though they're written in now, we need their help. We need them to look at their younger brothers, sisters, and get involved.
The thing is, it really, you know, I personally got hit between the eyes the other day when I went in for a carotid artery. I come out of the doctor's office being told I may have early onset Alzheimer's. That really hit me between the eyes. I know I'm going to need it. And 2 years ago, I didn't think I'd ever need it. Last week, I didn't think I'd need it. I'll probably need it in about 4 or 5 years. But we all need to stick together, shoulder to shoulder. We dip the stamps, get the mission accomplished, and keep driving forward on everything that has to do with veterans, no matter what era. And that's the way I feel.
What is the reason, when I look
so
at the legislation here, I'm just reading
all,
it.
Right.
What is the reason for leaving everybody else out between 1975 and after 9/11? What is the reason for omitting that whole period? Was there any given?
There's nothing given, but if you look at Congress right now, they're trying to get bills passed because we're in an election year. And to get this bill passed, they have to make it as cost-effective as possible. What easier way is it to make it cost-effective? leave a large group out. All right? We're talking a couple, we're talking in the millions of veterans that are excluded. Millions. Out of that, those millions, they'll probably add another 70,000 veterans to the program in the next 10 years.
Doug, to answer your question it sounds like triage to me, and Denise would know all about that, and you too. But it's almost like they take what they have to take first and then put everybody on the back burner. And it's like Denise said, rattle the cage, if you don't shake them up or squeaky wheel, they're not going to do anything. So the only thing you can do is make the calls and the emails, like Denise said, and it will get somebody's attention. Doug had an experience yesterday where they had put him off, abandoned him, and he began to be like a squeaky wheel to them, and they got some people's attention.
Right. We as Gulf War veterans have been rattling cages at the VAMCs, the VARO, and halls of Congress and Senate for 25 years. And we get treated like, veterans sociology books. Military is a second-class society. Within that society, the Gulf War veteran, is actually a second-class citizen within the veterans community. And that's perpetrated by Congress, and this is a prime example of it.
Another thing I'm going to interject here. We had an IOM report come out, and I sent Doug that, and I hope he forwards it to each of y'all. But the IOM report that came out, oh my goodness, it was back in February. And we were so torn up over it, because the first table tells you everything. Just like Vietnam, with strong association, weak association, and that's how they add presumptive conditions. That's typically of what they've done with Vietnam, Agent Orange, atomic vets. This report was devastating. The number one strongly associated was PTSD. Did not list our brain cancers. Did not list the early cardiac deaths. The other neurological problems that we're seeing that are resulting in early Alzheimer's. So there was like 8 or 9 recommendations. None of them really helpful to us. We rushed over to the Hill. We got a hearing that occurred on February 23rd was the first hearing. And it was done that quickly, which is unusual, as you all know, from the Hill, because they've been tracking it. Congressman Representative Kaufman with the oversight and investigation hearings. So we had that hearing. Then we had another hearing on March 15th. Then after that, we had our RAC meeting April 28th, 29th. The afternoon of the 29th, they set up by Federal Registry a special call-in line to talk about the IOM recommendations. Now, you can be aware that the veterans don't stay on topic. They probably had not read the IOM report. They probably hadn't looked at the recommendations and thought, whoa, what's being left out here? Where is our true epidemiological study showing all the morbidity and mortality data? And so we're going to probably have another public call-in in June sometime. Any comments on that need to be in by June 1st to victor.kolinsky@va.gov on the IOM written comments. So, it's like we're on a losing streak here. We haven't gotten the secretary to finally implement changing our deadline and making it, 5 years, 10 years, or even indefinite is what we'd like from December of 2016. He says he'll do it, but that's been going on for a year. Here we went to try to get more presumptive conditions. We've lost that. We've had the RAC completely overturned of the people we had, Jim Benz, Roberta White, Kimberly Sullivan, all the good people that were fighting for us. So they've completely, almost totally new people. Some of them more psychologically bent. As we've seen before, they keep wanting to push us into the stress category despite whatever studies we have and breaking research, using the most advanced research tools to show the damage neurologically, the hypercoagulation. So what I'm saying is we're on a losing streak. We've got to turn them around on this and make them listen to us so we can at least get caregivers offered for all veterans. We've got to pay attention to what they're doing on the IOM. And we have to, you know, gear up again like we were in the 90s, Doug, with all the hearings, the investigations, the Senate, you know, Senator Riegel's report. Because I tell you, they're trying to wipe the Gulf War veterans right off the face of the earth.
I mean, the IOM...
Well, you wanted to, you said something about Laura being a caregiver. It's like your wife and all the other ones. I mean, whoever has been to war, you came back and you tried to fit back in society, and many times our spouses were the ones that caught the biggest problem because they hear all the frustration. They see all the pain. They see the anger, the abandonment. And, you know, my wife wrote a part of that book about her, and it was about the struggles that she went through. And maybe she has some insight on that.
Laura?
Well, I didn't understand it. When the Vietnam War was going on, I was raising another family. We were not connected at all. We very seldom heard anything about the Vietnam War. So when, after my first husband died and Ray and I met and remarried, it was all new to me. I had a brother that was in Vietnam, but he was stationed in California, and me in North Carolina, we very seldom heard about anything about it, and so it was all new to me. And when we first got married, he didn't talk about any of his problems. He was very quiet about it, in contrast to the way he is today. So anyway... I didn't know what was going on when he began going off, maybe for no reason at all. He would just leave for a day or two, and we were running a business at the time, so it was not easy to take up the slack. And at first I thought it was me. And when he did begin to open up and tell me some of the problems that he had, it was just so different than anything I had been used to. And I think a lot of the Vietnam veterans today, I think a lot of the marriages would still be together today if the spouse would open up and just let her know that it's not her that he's having problems with. It's those memories and things that he's been through. I was one of the blessed ones or the lucky ones that... Ray did open up to me, and I began to understand, because I'm not sure we would have continued to be together if it had continued like that. And I think a lot would still be together today if they would just open up and let them know that it's not them. So maybe they do need more training in that field.
Okay, let me interject an example here. When I was up at the hearing, I was approached by a couple of new veterans, approached by a wife. Let me tell you, I'm not going to use the name, but here's the case. 24-year infantry airborne ranger, U.S. Army, of course, commanded 2502 Battalion, 101st Airborne Division, during the Desert Shield, Desert Storm War. He also served as public affairs, military liaison, instructed at West Point, held an advanced degree in journalism. And he's been diagnosed with cortical basal degeneration. He is in a nursing home out close to where my daughter lives in La Plata, Maryland. this wife has been able to, I mean, she's gone to everybody trying to get help on their claim, to get them coverage. Nothing's worked. I've gotten involved with it. But he is to the point that, you know, early Alzheimer's, whatever you want to call it, but he's pretty well out of it. It has been so much stress that she's been hospitalized. These are the cases of the Gulf War veterans. We had another one die the other day of a brain cancer, early age group. You know, so they need all the help in the world, people. And I know Vietnam vets that are sick too, but these are people that may still have family members at home. Their children are approaching the, you know, graduation from high school, going to college. We need to try to help these families so they stay together. And the caregiver, we have one of our wives that was involved in pushing this a number of years ago when the first 9/11 bill, the caregivers came out. And her husband, Gulf War vet, that he's in a bed. He's in a hospital bed at home. And they have fought, you know, and gotten their coverage. Then they had to go through all kinds of stuff because of the Fiduciary Act and having weapons taken away and all this kind of stuff. But she was one of the first ones that grabbed onto this and said, we need help as a wife. She still has young kids at home. I mean, if we don't raise up and hear these stories and know that it could happen, you know, just like Keith was saying, I mean, we've got to have a massive response. We can't be diverted by, you know, PTSD or...
Oh, Denise?
Yes?
Can I interject something here that's right along that lines?
Sure.
Last week, you know, the doctor prescribed me with a home health nurse. Somebody would come over and check and make sure everything's going correctly. Well, I get the call from the home health care section over at the Oklahoma City VA AMC, and the gal asked me if, you know, she started asking me, am I homebound and all this, and I said, no, I'm not. She says, well, okay, well, you're still kind of young. I said, yeah. And I said, what are you trying to get at? She says, do you have Medicare? And I said, yes, I do have Medicare. And she says, well, could you get Medicare to pay for the home health care nurse to come over? And I asked, why should I have Medicare pay for something that's covered under my 100% disability and the care should come from the VA? And she said, well, if you go through Medicare, they'll pay for it all, and you'll get the care quicker. And I told them I am not using my Medicare to have to pay for something that VA is legally obligated to provide me. And she replies back, well, it's going to take longer because I got a lot of paperwork to fill out. I said, fine, so be it. So, you know, VA's dragging their feet on it, and like I said, there's 4,000 people, vets that are enrolled in it, yet they have 34,000 awaiting care approval. And that's over the past since 2010.
How many are waiting for care?
Pardon?
How many people applied for care that have not been approved?
I believe the number the GAO reported out was 34,000.
34,000 families in horrible need.
Right.
That's the reason for the suicide level, too, Doug, because people seem to get abandoned by the VA, abandoned by the military, abandoned by their families at some point, and they feel totally abandoned. And that's why we work with them about moral injury also, because the moral injury is part of it, that it gives you that spiritual realm. And, you know, through Jesus Christ, I mean, my wife and I have been together, and we're one mind on this thing. We made a commitment to each other a long time ago. And sometimes we don't feel like we love each other, we still stay committed. And if more people would do that, I'm telling you, they have to have that spiritual realm, they have to have moral injury, they have to have the physical parts of it, everything. because I've said before on this program, I said the VA gave me medication and therapy. That was great, but only God gave me peace and forgiveness. And so when you have all that, it does help you to get better. You know, Doug, we know the VA may not help you at all, so you're going to have to push on and get yourself worked on. So, Keith, you're talking about, I think it was Keith talking about
right.
the Medicare.
The thing is, the VA is understaffed when it comes to this issue, and it requires
right.
a medical staff member, a doctor or nurse, to come to your home to inspect it. They don't have the people to do it. They have some of the statistics they had there, they have a ratio 1 to 4, 1 to 144, so they have one person to review an application for every 144 applicants. That's quite a bit. Yet some other hospitals have a ratio 1 to 4. You know, it's just like anywhere else. Some veteran populations are greater in one place than in another.
But I think there's another problem. I got to come out to the family.
America
I know
never,
here for some that I've worked with, the home health care, and they
better.
Need it. They're in such horrible shape that anything what we would consider normal hygiene or normal maintenance around the house and the home has been totally neglected, or if not just completely ignored. And so now you go out and you've got hygiene problems, you've got bathing problems, you've got filth all over the place, you've got structural problems, because that sick and ill veteran couldn't do it, and there was nobody else out there to take care of and do the minor repairs. And then the wife has got to, whoever's left there has got to work full-time, plus take care of the veteran full-time, plus cook full-time, plus take any care of any kids full-time. And then
the whole
family falls apart
about,
because the
okay?
house hasn't
if
been taken care of, the hygiene isn't
they
done.
Were age 19.
The sick veteran is so flustered and frustrated from lack of care and adequate care. I see where it totally comes apart, and I understand thoroughly today why so many choose suicide. I thoroughly understand it.
Doug, I'm going to interject here. The veterans of Gulf War may have been 19 over in Desert Storm. We're 25 years on. Okay, so they're in their early 40s. Okay?
Yeah, demographics is 43 to 70.
43 to 70 is this donut hole, okay? And so there are still families that are struggling together, denial rate on their claims, but they got to get rated to qualify for this caregiver. But the other item is that, you know, we have to look at that age. And if they're bedridden, I mean, we've heard of some of these getting caregivers that may be PTSD, but the wife is still working, but on the caregiver program. You know, there is some abuse of this program and it needs to be tightened up. But the fact is, our age group needs to be cared for. We need the caregiver bill. I want to remind everyone that we're trying to talk about the Veterans First Act that was recently sent through the Veterans Affairs Committee on the Senate side. House Chairman of their House Veterans Affairs Committee is kind of, sounds like almost endorsing it and going, let's go for it, you know, because the House was working on separate bills and hadn't put all the bills together. So we have a problem here that it's not just PTSD, people. I know there's PTSD. I know there's moral issues. But we have people like Mike Woods. He died of a cancer. He was cared for by his wife. They had three young children at home. And Mike died at home.
Right.
How much would it help to have a caregiver
there? We have people out there with cancer, neurological, and organic brain issues going. Yes. We're left out of the thing, and our dependents, who are our caregivers, need the help.
And it has to be an expeditious help, not a claims help, disability. They're doing those within 4 to 6 months now. It's time that the American people woke up and took care of the people that have protected them. And that's by making a forceful request to Congress.
And
there's another part of the
state of affairs
is our veteran populace is only 1% of the population.
The other part that's frustrating,
that's a sad state of affairs.
The other part that's frustrating, when everybody gave to war and the families remained behind, everybody picked up new jobs and new responsibilities. Then the veteran came back, it was John Wayne Rambo, you know, Clint Eastwood all wrapped up in one, could leap tall buildings at a single bound, and now he's got to get help to walk from, you know, his bedroom and his chair, fancy chair, out, you know, over to the bathroom or try down to get the mail. And that absolute frustration from where you could run and leap tall buildings at a single bound to where you're housebound is ripping families apart.
That it is.
I mean, how can a veteran feel good about himself when they're, you know, down to nothing? And I've seen these veterans, and the Vietnam era veterans, especially in our group, there's so many of them that have lost their leg. Now they're getting older, and the diabetes is catching up, and their limbs are being chopped off. And then everything they hoped and they dream has gone up in smoke. And then, Ray, I mean, you keep saying this, Ray, over and over again. You've got the brand-new kids at Camp Lejeune that they feel like they're living in a wall and they have no place to go.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. You want to say something? She wants to tell you something.
About a year and a half ago, and I'm not sure Ray's mentioned this or not, but to show you how neglectful they are, Ray didn't miss any visits to the VA, and he had his blood checked at one time, and because that he had just seemed to be losing energy, and at first they were not even going to do it, but then he kept insisting that they check his blood because something was wrong, and when they checked it and he left, and they said that they would get back with him. Well, that was 2 or 3 days after that, about 2 or 3 days, he was cleaning some gutters on our house. And about 2 weeks later, that they had not called. And we had said a time or two that we needed to get back with them, but we would just keep putting it off because we felt sure they would, because they said they would. And he fell off the house and broke both wrists. And so the first thing they did when he got to the emergency room, they checked his blood and found out his hemoglobin was a 5, which should have been between 15 and 16. And they immediately gave him about 5 or 6 units of blood. And they said they don't know how he was even walking around with that low. And when he stayed in the hospital a couple of days, when he got out, he called them and told them about it, and they said, "Oh no, we sent it to you." And he said, Ray said, "No, you didn't. We never got it. You never called." So he went and checked his records, and the very words he used, this was the PA or doctor's assistant or somebody, said, "Nope, we didn't call you. We dropped the ball." And we thought sure that they would just really get on it and be on top of it, but they just sort of passed it off. "Well, you're better now. We don't know what happened." And that was just neglect. But anyway, that's just another example.
Yeah. Let's stay on the topic if we can, okay? Caregiver for all veterans. Make your point to call your senator, your representatives, in their D.C. office. Don't stop at the receptionist. Get to a veteran staffer and tell them you see a problem with the Veterans First Act that is dividing veterans and not covering all veterans for the caregiver benefits. There should never never, ever be a division of who gets what benefits, you know, and something like the caregiver. We need to stay focused on that. We need to spread the word in all of our communities. We need the emails. Like I said, go to www.senate.gov. There's a little icon. You can pull up their phone numbers and their email address. All of it's right there. Same thing on the www.house.gov. Look at the icon for representative up at the top. Same information. It's readily available.
That's right. All, so, all veterans are equal.
Yeah.
Equal.
And
doesn't matter when, where, or how you serve, you're equal.
Right. And, you know, this isn't, you know, it's about all of us and the people that need it. It's not supposed to be segmented. And no, the VA's not perfect. And a lot of complaints from all veterans about issues that have happened to us, just like you've mentioned.
Oh, big thing, Denise, this is not a VA issue as it sits right now. The VA is the law enforcement arm of Congress. They're supposed to enact a program, get it rolling. Well, we've been, what's happened to us is we've been dissed by Congress, by the legislation of this country, which happens to be the people of this country. Congress is the representative of the citizen. That's what my biggest craw is right there.
And
the
this
Senate
is right squarely.
We are the representative of the people.
This is a bill that came through the Veterans Affairs Committee on the Senate side. The House chairman of the House Veterans Affairs seems to be waving the flag and go, yeah, let's go on conference this and get it done, you know, for Memorial Day. You know, we always have a veterans omnibus bill. We've got to stop them in their tracks. We need massive phone calls to the Hill. I'm calling out to everybody that listens to this program. This Veterans First Act divides veterans, and that is not appropriate. We all need to stand up and say all veterans, not prior to 1975 and after post 9/11. It's just not equitable. That's not the way this country should take care of our veterans in any form.
Denise, I have to say this too, and I've said it before, but no country is supposed to be at war for 25 years. I've never heard of that. And so when you've been at war for 25 years, and before that, Vietnam, really, if you really look at the numbers and all, we were at war for about 15 years. We had people in Vietnam, and they were getting killed. But when you've only had 15 years off in that 40 years you're talking about, I'm telling you, or actually it's 50 years, you have too many veterans, and that's the way the VA, they never were designed for this many veterans, people going to war. We should have learned this thing a long time ago as Americans, but now we got the problem. Now we got to get it fixed.
Well, and the other problem that Keith has brought up in the past is when we open the doors at the VA, and we're getting a little off course, but instead of those just disabled, you know, they open the door all the way down to Category 8.
Yeah.
The thing is, I was in service a few times. IETS, first time in 76. A month later, I had pleurisy going. I went to the doc. She asked me if I could afford my treatment. I looked at her, said no, and she said, go to the VA. I walked over to the VA, and they asked me, do you have a disability? And I said, no, and they said, we cannot treat you. So I said, fine. Years later, went back in the service, got out. First thing I did, I put in for a disability, got accepted, no problem, no co-pays. And then they opened it up to other categories, and they threw co-pays on it. I'm stuck with co-pay. I'm Category 8. All right, at one time, unless you were disabled,
and it was right after Vietnam, and I can understand it, you could not get care. Nowhere was I ever promised care unless I was injured or made ill by my service. I understood that as a young private. Now they flooded the system. The system can't keep up with the flood, and the citizens of the United States do not want to put more money into the VA because of the scandals that are going on.
Exactly.
The system just cannot handle it. They need to pare back on who is eligible. Yes, granted, every veteran has done their service. There's got to be a caveat there to provide good service to those that were injured or made ill by service first. And that's just not fair. And that was proven once again by the Soldiers First Act on the home health care portion.
I was looking through the information, Keith, that you provided in preparation for this, and it says here, quote, the pool of pre-9/11 era caregivers likely to be eligible for benefits as the program is expanded could be as high as 80,000, the VA reported last year, end quote. I mean, you've got 4,000 that can't handle it now, and if they go into the area pre-9/11 after Vietnam, 80,000 additional more in need?
Right.
Well, if they know they got 80,000 in need, they realize the program has absolutely got to be beefed up. But we're talking
right.
about economics and everything, and this goes back to the decision we ran across with the day one in Desert Storm, where we're not going to acknowledge the health and environmental effects of the costs.
Right.
This is astonishing. I mean, the VA knows they got 80,000 in need, and therefore, and Congress knows they have 80,000 in need, and they're just going to dump them because of the dollar?
Right, because no one's saying anything. No one knows. It's a tightly held secret.
I mean, when we came back to Vietnam, nobody wants to acknowledge or deal with it at all, and we all just came back and walked back into the world of the Disney World from hell. And we've continued
right.
on. Now, we can all succeed, we can all grow, and we can all do there, but you have to have medical help in order to get through the day. And the families have
right.
to have help to get through the day, and when that's given, the next thing you know it collapses around us.
Mm-hmm. You would hold
music
here.
Is coming up.
The family
and I'd like to remind everybody, get on, read the Veterans First Act of 2016, make phone calls, to the Hill, to your House of Representatives, and to your senators, email them. I need unrelenting, massive pressure continuously on the caregiver portion of that bill.
Okay, we're out of time. Denise, I think you've made it very clear. Contact your House of Representatives, your senator, contact everybody. Get it to the media, ladies and gentlemen, and take care of the veterans of our nation. Again, the Progressive Nate Radio Network and Warrior Connection leads the way. Thanks to God.
Find out what it means to me.